All right. Thanks for joining us, Murphy's Law Podcast. Today, I am very lucky to have joining us Tudor Dixon, who is a Republican candidate for governor right here in Michigan. Thank you, Tudor, for taking the time out of your busy, busy schedule for joining us today on Murphy's Law.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
So for those that have been paying attention to our show and obviously the gubernatorial race, seems like the field has been cut in roughly half. We have spoken with a couple of the other candidates, but I just want to give you a couple of moments to introduce yourself to our audience so they can kind of get to know Tudor a little bit more.
Sure. Yeah. Let me tell you a little bit about my background. I come from a manufacturing background. My family had a steel foundry in Muskegon, Michigan. I worked in the foundry. I went to forging after that. And most recently, I've been in the media. So I did have an afternoon show on Real America's Voice for 2 hours a day, where we interviewed congressmen and senators and talked to Democrats and reached across the aisle, or maybe argued a little bit across the aisle, but that really propelled me into the political world in a new way. And I had been kind of working to get conservative voices out there for the past 5 years. So this next jump into politics seemed like the right move. When I worked with my dad, he oftentimes said to me, "Don't come into my office with a problem if you don't have a solution. I don't need a reporter." And I got to the point where I was saying, I'm always reporting on this stuff. What can I do about it? We looked at the governor's race and it seemed very winnable at that point. And we still think that the governor is extremely vulnerable. I mean, especially from the restaurant community, as you know, she was brutal. She shut people down and then she was vindictive and went back after people. Same with the attorney general. And that's why that race is so important. We have Matt DiPerno running for attorney general. And we think it's very important that people come out for governor, attorney general, and secretary of state so that we can make sure this doesn't happen again, that government is not weaponized against the people. But the state is in a critical point right now because we also need to improve our education system. The education system has been in decline for many years, and the latest report shows that by 2030, we'll be in the bottom five states in the nation if we don't do something quickly. So we want to quickly get in and improve education, improve public safety, bring back a workforce, and become a friendly government to businesses like you.
Yeah, that has been a very interesting topic as of late. You know, we've heard about some happenings with Kellogg and the Battle Creek area and their whole identity with being revolved around Kellogg's. We're seeing a pattern, unfortunately, where our state has really not been friendly. Not just in the last 2 years, but for quite some time now. We're always talking about on our program, you know, so many layers of administrative, this, that, and regulatory, and it's only gotten worse. And now in the last couple of years, we've obviously seen the governor taking some of that executive authority and using it and then found unconstitutional, and then delegating some authority to the health department in that broad ranging, we always call it the 2253, which has now been ruled unconstitutional, even though it is being challenged by the state in the Court of Appeals, and they even actually applied to the state Supreme Court. Supreme Court said, I believe about a month, 2 months ago, that they're not gonna take up this case on a bypass application. If anything, the Court of Appeals can hear it first if they deem it worthy to be heard regardless. We have not talked about on our program, but there was a case that came out of the Court of Claims a few weeks ago, the T&V Associates case. That judge there actually ruled that 2253 was constitutional, even citing INRI certified questions, which is the case that took down the Emergency Powers of the Governor Act. So we see that they're already trying to stack the deck for if a time comes when the Court of Appeals potentially could take this case. Now they have one case saying, our case saying it's unconstitutional. Now they have a Court of Claims case saying that it is constitutional. But anybody that takes and reads any of these cases, the INRI certified questions case, our case with Judge Hunter, and then this thing, you're going to see that these are worlds apart. One thing that I heard you mention earlier in your introduction was, you know, you're always working on an action plan. You know, I don't want to talk about it. Let's do something. And I think that that is really what this state needs is somebody that is going to look at that point of view. A business background certainly helps, because those of us in business, we have to do, we don't get to talk. I don't get to call up the power company and talk my way out of paying the power bill. I got to keep my business open. And that's why we fought the mandates in the fall of 2020. But one of the other things that we're always discussing beyond the overreach and the mandates is giving the power back to elected officials and accountability. But what we're seeing today, as we're doing this interview, the Supreme Court has reversed Roe v. Wade. I want to make sure that I get the language correct on that. But basically, and I don't want to get into Roe v. Wade or abortion necessarily evenly, but what's interesting about this as it relates to us is they're giving, we talked about this briefly before, that they're giving the decision-making back to the states, back to the legislatures, back to the people ultimately, right?
Right, absolutely. So this is very important, because a lot of people, I mean, there's a lot of chatter across the country saying that this makes abortion illegal across the country. That's not what's happening. It is giving the decision-making power back to the states, because the states should be making decisions. It's similar to what we're seeing right now in energy. Honestly, I was talking to someone earlier today and they said, we need the states to go back to making the decisions about drilling and how the licensing goes and the regulatory code for drilling in individual states, rather than having the federal government be able to shut down all of our energy sources and shut down our energy independence. I mean, these are things that the states have power. The states should be able to take these things back. And for me, I'm very excited about today's decision. I think this is a long time coming. A lot of people have fought for the chance to overturn Roe v. Wade and take it back to the states. Many states already have laws in their constitution that make a decision on when or how or if you can have an abortion. The interesting part about Michigan is that we know that this governor wants to have abortion up to the moment of birth. And so that's why elections are so important. But I want to go back to what you were talking about with the shutdowns, because you made a very interesting point. You said, more than just the past 2 years has been hard, this administration has been hard on business in general, and that continues. In fact, we have some businesses that are so afraid of the retribution of this governor coming back after them that they don't even want to talk about the race, because they just say, we're hoping someone beats her, but we're afraid to get involved for fear she'll come after us. But that's how her administration really works. The bureaucracy is going after people, whether it's through the licensing organization, permitting, environmental, whatever it is. We have a government that right now is going after business. So whether I talk to the largest business in the state or some of the smallest businesses in the state, they say Michigan is just not willing to come to the table and work with us. And we have to change that right away. And I know you feel that every day.
Yeah, I kind of have a shit eating grin on my face as you're talking about this, and not because it's funny, but we're still fighting the liquor commission. I have a hearing a couple of days from now, actually 5 days from now, another Zoom hearing. They're trying to find me in violation for being open. Well, they did it originally December of 2020. Then they came back basically a month later, January 6th, 2021. Could be coincidental. They came back in and then gave us another violation. So even though we have gone through that process, and now this law that they're trying to find us in violation of has already been found unconstitutional, even in our county, forget about the state. So they're continuing to come after us. And the other part, the reason why I'm kind of grinning is I just opened an envelope from, you can see PAC on that political action committee. This is the Michigan Licensed Beverage Association. And right here from the beginning, it says, the MLBA has been fighting for the rights of bar and restaurant owners since 1939. It goes on, but it's basically BS from there on out. The MLBA was never anywhere close to helping me as a licensee fight the battle against the Liquor Commission, the Health Department, the Michigan Department of Agriculture, my OSHA, the City of Gaylord. This is exactly the problem. You know,
we got on top of the fact that
buried on top of us.
And on top of the fact that you, as restaurants, I know, went to the governor and said, we have a safety plan. We want to be able to open. And you were open while other businesses were open. The idea that someone is essential and someone is not, there's no room for that anymore. We can never treat people like that again. And little did we know that government would be able to treat people like that. And ultimately, you're right, it was deemed unconstitutional. So for them to go back now, think about this. This is when people say that this governor is vindictive and she wants to enact revenge on people. I mean, what more could this be, going back to a restaurant that fought her orders? But what choice did restaurants have? We had, what, 3,000, at least 3,000 restaurants close across the state. And no matter how many times restaurants went to her with a safety plan, which ultimately, if you are a business, safety is always your number one concern. Regardless of how many times they went to her with a safety plan, they got nothing back. In fact, she went after you. She went after Marlena. There were multiple places that she just went after and shut down. And then when she couldn't do it herself, you're right, she weaponized the health department. It sounds like that's happening with liquor control now. And think, we are now past the pandemic and this is still coming back to you. It's crazy. And what would another 4 years mean?
It is, absolutely. And to that point, they have actually postponed the portion of that hearing that relates to our violation of 2253. They haven't dismissed it. They have postponed it. Why they haven't dismissed it, we can only guess. I have many ideas of why that might be, but let me ask you one. I've got two more questions for you. This one's really easy. My co-host Chris Kuhn, who joins me on the podcast, his question, he wants to know, what sets Tudor Dixon apart from her opponents in this primary?
Well, honestly, I think that what we've been talking about is what sets me apart. Having had a small business, because we had a foundry on the lake in Muskegon, and we understood what it was. I understand what it is to deal with government. And even back then, even 20 years ago, we had government heavily involved in our business, and we understood we were a manufacturing company and we had a lot of codes to adhere to, but it was very overbearing. Now, as I go around the state, companies tell me, we have, whether we're builders, whether it's a farmer, whether it's a restaurant, whether it's a manufacturer, the government is overbearing. And I understand what it is to be on the other side of the government. And therefore, I think that I'm in a unique position to go into government and say, we've got to make some changes or the state's really in serious trouble. Because no matter who I talk to, whether it is our biggest businesses, again, or our smallest businesses, they are considering leaving, and that could be catastrophic for the state. So from a business perspective, I understand that world better than really any of the other candidates, but also I'm a mom of four daughters. And so I'm walking alongside every other parent who's out there dealing with the education system as it is right now. And as I said, our education system is in serious decline. We also had a Supreme Court decision that came out of the Maine case that said that they are going to allow dollars to follow the child in that state to religious schools. That's an opportunity for us here in the state of Michigan to have dollars follow the child. This is something we want. We want to get our kids back on track. I'm walking alongside the parents who have kids that have fallen behind because I'm feeling it myself. Our kids were out of school longer than most other students across the nation, and they're behind. We have to have a true plan to catch up. We came up with a tutoring plan. The governor, about 7 days later, came up with the same tutoring plan. So we feel that she's watching us. We don't want to give her advice on governing. We'd rather go in there and make sure the state thrives when it comes to business, when it comes to education, and when it comes to public safety, which are all the reasons, all the issues that impact whether or not people move to the state of Michigan. And we are desperately in need of at least 1 million more people to come to this state. And we believe that we have the resources and tools to make sure that that can happen.
Absolutely. And thank you for bringing up the education point, because so many of our viewers are involved and listen to the updates that we give on the mask mandates and how we've been, I shouldn't say we, but collectively have been fighting those health departments and the schools. Sometimes they're together, sometimes they're separate. But the other thing that I did want to mention from your comment there is that there is really something to be said for those of us that have ever been in small business, owned a small business, ran a small business, employed people. The name of the game is cutting spending, right? Government doesn't make money. but they sure can save money. So I can appreciate that point of view beyond a mom of four and the coordination that it takes to do that and everything else that you do. So the last question that I wanted to have ask you, very, very, very simple. Where is the next place that folks can come meet and greet Tudor Dixon for governor?
Yeah, we have an event in Traverse tomorrow. So Traverse City area, I believe we'll be in. So we'll put that out. Actually, we'll put a notification out on Twitter today so that people can make sure they're there. It's early in the morning, about 10 a.m. We'll be up there meeting and greeting people. And then there's a Kalamazoo GOP pig roast on Sunday afternoon. So we'll be over there on Sunday. We'd love to have people come out. We want to meet as many folks as we can.
Sounds good. Tudor Dixon, thank you so much for taking the time to be on our silly little podcast, as I like to call it. I know you've got a very, very busy schedule. Good luck on everything that you do. Thank you for the support. Thank you for taking the time. Tudor Dixon, thank you very much.
Thank you.